You're in with Dolores Cahill on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Dolores Cahill Show on TNTRadio.live. And you can follow me on custodian.com, C-U-S-T-O-D-E-A-N.com. And we're joined now by another guest from Canada. We were talking to Professor Magda Havas before the break. And now we have Dr. Sam Dubay, who is a medical doctor and is also coming to us today from Ottawa in Canada. Hi, Sam. Lovely to have you on. And if you want to just give some background as well, and I know you've done some work as well in radiation in your previous life as you were a student.
Thank you, Galadriel. It is an honor to be here today with you and Magda. So I'm a non-clinical physician. I don't see patients now. I do work primarily in education and consulting in the health and fitness industry. But also in my previous life, I was university faculty in mathematics. So my original background is mathematics and physics. And I have a PhD in modern applied math and degrees in physics as well. So it's an interesting connection here because I've actually heard of Professor Magda Havas. Magda, your work. I've been interested in this field for some time, specifically how it relates to electromagnetic smog and devices. And I actually did my medical school fourth year project on cell phone radiation and the brain, and the interphone study was featured very prominently in that, and there was definitely a strong correlation between brain cancer and cell phone use. I believe it was over 10 years, 20 minutes or more a day. It was like a double, there was a doubling of the incidence of brain cancer, acoustic neuromas, and these things. And it was very interesting because in the conclusion of the interphone study, it was one third funded by the telecommunications industry, and they started tearing apart their own study because I'm assuming they got results that they weren't prepared for because of the strong correlation. And there was a Scandinavian team that was independent. They didn't have any financial ties to the telecommunications industry. And the name of the researcher escapes me now, unfortunately, but they did very, very good work. And so they've been working on this for quite some time and showed strong correlations. And, I concluded, I remember doing my oral presentation and concluded that, you know, children shouldn't be using cell phones because of the size of their skulls, the thickness of the bone, the greater the water content, the fact that their cells were undergoing proliferation, much more prone to DNA mutation. And so I just said, just don't let anyone under 16 use a cell phone. I said, well, it was under 12 was the recommendation. I said, just under 16, because people hit puberty.
And what year was that, Sam?
That would have been in 2012, but I've been interested in that for many years prior to that, probably back from when cell phones first started, because back in the day, I remember in the 90s, we had these cell phones. I had a girlfriend who would go skiing and she had this monolithic device that if you hit someone with it, it would be considered a weapon, and would take that out in the field skiing so she could communicate. I could go into more detail here, but I've always been interested in human potential and somewhat worry of, the consequences of man-made devices, technology. That's why I'm very skeptical of the transhuman movement, transhumanism at this point, especially when we talk about, implanting chips into brains and such. We don't even understand completely how humans, function. Consciousness is something I've been interested in for a long period of time. I could probably talk about that for a long time, so I don't want to go there. But
very good. We'll let Magda join in, but just to say that my PhD, I started it in 1989, but it was around glioblastomas and astrocytomas.
So you were like four when you started your PhD? Was that it?
Wow. That's right. Very good question. I was actually 3.5. But also, sadly, one of my family members also died because there is a huge increase in glioblastomas and brain tumors. And actually the life expectancy was around 2 years after diagnosis, and it hasn't improved really, because a lot of the treatments really have not improved. But I think, Magda, there's huge potential, isn't there, once people are aware now of the connection between radiation and mobile phones to reduce the incidence of cancers, including brain tumors.
That's right. As a, you know, as a matter of fact, not putting your cell phone to your head is absolutely critical. So putting it in speaker mode and not even having it in your hand is the ideal way to talk on a cell phone. You can use earbuds, for example, that are wired. If you use wireless earbuds, you're just going to increase your radiation even more. So speakerphone is the ideal way and not putting it near your head. I remember when that Interphone study came out, CBC asked me to comment on it, and they sent me a copy of the paper, you know, just prior to the interview, the day before the interview, and there were two appendices. Now, to me, an appendix is something you append, you add, it's attached to the paper, and they sent it to me without the appendices. And what was really interesting about one of the appendices is that it was a minority report from this group. They had designed the study in such a way that part of it actually showed that using cell phones reduced your risk of brain cancer. That's how flawed it was. And so when a subset of the scientists reevaluated it with appropriate controls, that's when they found this at least doubling of different types of cancers on the same side of the head that you use the cell phone, which is, you know, really critical. So, you know, that was an important study. It was deeply flawed. It was funded by the wireless industry. And I think that's the real problem that we're facing today. The wireless industry has infiltrated the government. They've infiltrated universities, so they determine the type of research that's being done. There's virtually no funding for this kind of research in North America at all, despite the fact that our levels of exposure to electrosmog are just skyrocketing, and they're going higher and higher. And some of the devices that people are designing just make no sense. And I'm going to mention two. One are diapers. You can get a diaper that has a little chip in it, and when it gets wet, it will send your cell phone a message saying, change, you know, Johnny's diaper, which is ludicrous. So it's exposing the child to the radiation right at their genitals. The other thing is a soother or a pacifier that has a radio frequency transmitter inside, and it measures your temperature. And so you're recommended as a mother or a father to place this inside your infant's head so it's transmitting the microwaves and telling your cell phone what the infant's temperature is should they have a fever. I mean, people have gone crazy. The government isn't doing their job. The industry is infiltrated and people simply don't know. So shows like this are so critically important to share that information with the public.
We're very happy to as well. I mean, it's shocking. And Sam, you were a medical doctor as well. And I know, what are your thoughts on what's going on? And also maybe let us know a little bit about the situation in Canada.
Yeah, well, I think Magda and I can talk easily together about some of the reprehensible things that have happened here in Canada. And most notably recently with the Freedom Convoy of the truckers. And we just had last weekend, Rolling Thunder, a biker convoy. And most notably here is the portrayal by the mainstream media. So you're looking at CBC, CTV, Global News, and how they tried to portray the truckers. And it was a reflection of what our Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, was stating in Parliament, making claims that they were a small fringe minority, and then invoking the Emergency Act for a small fringe minority, and a bunch of racists. And I spent days out there with the truckers in person in very cold weather. And I will tell you, there were lots of minorities, including myself, standing there. We had Sikh truckers, we had Eastern European truckers, we had female truckers, we had African Canadian truckers, we had a huge Métis and First Nations Métis Aboriginal presence there. So it was a real insult to the attendees to say that, this was largely a bunch of disgruntled fringe white people from the West trying to make a point and, threatening people through Canada not wanting to be injected when, a big percentage of them were in fact injected. They were fighting for against the mandates They didn't want to be mandated. They were fighting for freedom. And the science definitely backed their position. And when you have a leader, a party, a cabinet claiming that they're following the science and then refusing to engage in any kind of scientific debate or prove their position, you realize it's all rhetoric and propaganda, and they don't have a leg to stand on. And they've engaged in like serious overreach to the point where they're being sued left, right, and center right now. The lawsuits, not the least of which include Brian Peckford, the Honorable Brian Peckford, one of our Canadian founding fathers and one of the last surviving architects who helped create the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and Patriot the Constitution. I mean, this gentleman has sued the federal government over travel mandates. And this is something that you're directly involved in, Dolores, with your Freedom Travel Alliance. And this is essentially making over 6 million and probably more Canadians prisoner. There's actually an estimate of much higher number of Canadians who haven't been fully injected and who can't get on a plane, a train or boat to leave the country. And so yeah, I don't know.
Exactly. I'm one of the co-founders of freedomtravelalliance.com. And we, you know, through that, people can get charter planes all around the world. Everywhere, but also we are involved in taking whistleblowers, you know, in emergency situations to protect them when the governments are clamping down. And a lot of the time, these are medical doctors and nurses that are trying to provide the information just that there are prevention and treatments. And often they are the most honorable people, you know, in their nations across the world that are trying to protect, you know, to get the information out that what really is going on is a clampdown on bodily integrity and freedom of speech.
Absolutely. Magda, what was your perspective then of the trucker convoy?
Well, I haven't been so proud of Canada ever compared to what was happening. The truckers left British Columbia and the eastern provinces and arrived in Ottawa, which is not quite in the center of the country, but sort of close. And they had crowds along the entire route cheering them on with Canadian flags. You know, Canadians aren't really nationalistic. You know, we don't do a lot of rah, 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 we're great. We're really quite, you know, modest in how we think about things. And the fact that so many Canadians came out to support the truckers was just incredibly satisfying. I felt so proud of them. I donated to them. And when I found out that the donations were going to be given to a different charity, I was really upset. And I contacted GoFundMe and said, I wanted, you know, my money refunded. I wasn't donating to another charity. And fortunately, they refunded the whole thing. They take 15% of the money for themselves. And if they could give it to another charity, they wouldn't have had to give back that 15%. So they were trying to hold on to that. I was so upset. Well, I was incredibly proud of Canadians. I was so upset with our government, particularly Trudeau, but also the leader of the NDP that has basically sided with Trudeau. They're both members of the World Economic Forum, and I think they're just trying to convert Canada into a totalitarian state. And I'm absolutely shocked that this could happen so quickly in a democratic society. The truckers and all their supporters were, you know, they had a love-in, basically. They had kids there.
Yep.
You know, families, you know, people were.
It was better than Canada Day, Magda. It was better than Canada Day. OK,
totally agree. Yeah, they were hugging each other. You know, it was like a party atmosphere. And what they're really protesting against are the mandates. The fact that the government has been so irresponsible. They wanted the truckers to spend 2 more weeks after they crossed the border in quarantine, which means that they couldn't earn a living. So totally unreasonable. And I think the sooner we get rid of our federal government, the better. Now, I was so upset that Trudeau was considering bringing in the Emergencies Act that I sent out a questionnaire. I designed one 4 days before the vote on the Emergencies Act, and I sent it out. And it went viral, which really kind of shocked me. I was hoping we'd get, you know, 1,000 people responding. We ended up getting 93,000 Canadians responding to the survey. It's on my website. And the words that came up about the truckers, one question was, you know, how has the trucker convoy in Ottawa affected you? And the words that came out was hope, you know, love, giving me a sense, you know, of pride and being a Canadian. Like, it was all incredibly positive. So about 90% of the respondents supported the truckers, and about 10% of the respondents supported the government. And when it
they probably worked for the government, Micah.
Well, you know, and when we asked them have the mandates affected you, the stories, and we've got thousands of pages of stories. We've got, you know, 90,000 responses to this, like long answers. And the response about the government was so sad and depressing that I actually cried when I read some of them. You know, there's been families that have broken up. People have lost their jobs. People are suicidal. Like, it's absolutely horrific what has happened. And the fact that Trudeau is able to get away with this is something that I find absolutely abhorrent. And I'm hoping that our legal system will take care of it in the end.
I feel the same as you, Magda, totally. I can't believe how far this has gone, and the fact that the government went that far so easily. And, you know, what's also concerning is, you know, we all have friends or people in our circles who have seemingly just believed the propaganda on the mainstream media. And we know they were funded to the tune of $600 million. They were subsidized, so to speak, to help them during the pandemic. And they've just become mouthpieces for what the Liberal government, and now with this non-coalition coalition with NDP, ironically, a socialist party, you know, not standing up for the common man and joining the Liberals, and Trudeau's disdain for the working folk. This is very strange, to say the least. And basically just touting whatever the government narrative is, and the public health narrative. And it's not only unconscionable, it's actually ridiculous. Like, when you listen to it, it just makes no sense.
Yeah. And just, I was being interviewed even whatever from May 2020, and the journalist would say to me before the interview that they knew what I was saying was correct, and that there was prevention of treatment and vitamin D, but that 90% of the advertising that they got on their radio stations or on the newspapers were coming from the government, and it had strings attached that they could not give this information. So they were going to, in the interview, telling me in advance and not allow me to speak, and then ridicule me about, you know, prevention and treatments to reduce fear for the elderly, you know, which was unconscionable. You know, this was from 2020. So the journalists and the media knew. So I do think we do need to have an initiative as well to hold journalists that are lying to the public and deceiving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, there was legislation passed that made it okay to misinform people via the media. You know, and that in itself is appalling that could happen. And as far as I'm concerned, mainstream media is complicit to killing people. Absolutely. Especially with the suppression and the discrediting of early treatment modalities. You didn't have anything to lose by prescribing hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, for instance. Okay. And there are dozens and dozens of other repurposed medications, well-known with a great safety profile, medications that could be used. And the physicians are not hearing about it, or they're being given a company line and they have to toe the company line. They don't want to know the truth, or they've completely and utterly drunk the Kool-Aid to be consistent with their own thoughts and actions over the last couple of years. Now going on 2.5 years to flatten the curve, you know, originally taking 2 weeks. And so, you know, there's huge conflicts of interest, as you touched upon here, Dolores, regarding, you know, sponsorship, the networking that are coming out now that have been in existence for some time, and they're actually being exploited. The average person either doesn't want to know or won't look into it. And this is one of the major issues here, is when you have this kind of coalition, this kind of working together of the corporations and the government. I mean, this is fascism. This is essentially fascism. And I'm in complete agreement with Magda. Why is it when an MP from Oshawa relates a question from one of their constituents about the potential conflict of interest of the Deputy Prime Minister, Chrystia Freeland, and her involvement as a board member for the World Economic Forum, they claim they got audio problems. And then, oh, it's a great question, but we couldn't really hear it. And they move on. They don't have the question repeated. They don't readdress it. They don't make the effort to actually hear the question. It's so obvious they don't want to discuss this. And in the US now, they're bringing up the WEF. And this is a non-governmental foreign private body affecting a sovereign nation's decisions. This is wrong, any way you cut it, legally wrong, ethically wrong, and yet Trudeau Jr. is going along with this. And you kind of wonder, does he really understand what's actually happening here? And, you know, you can't help but look into his questionable past and questionable qualifications. And, you know, I used to think, hey, being prime minister, that requires a lot of background and well, and qualifications. That's like, no, pretty much anybody can be prime minister now, knowing what's happened and who's in charge. So actually, or who is supposedly in charge, because, you know, there's such thing as, you know, people pulling strings and such. And we see that potentially happening with Biden in the U.S. and definitely here in Canada. There's a lot more going on than meets the public eye. So I'm sorry for ranting, and I'll try to.
Oh, no, it's okay. And I'm sure, Magda, you have your perspective as well, because for decades, no, it's great because, you know, all of us in a way have been seeing the lack of accountability and that in various fields, whether it's in immunology, in vaccines, in radiation, in medicine, that they have been doing things that end up poisoning people, benefiting potentially financially a cartel. But really, I don't think it's about money. It's about harming people's lives and doing the opposite that would actually promote health and happiness in our nations. But Magda, you have, I know, a huge experience in this as well.
Well, you know, I'm an environmental toxicologist, so I've been involved in pollution research for 40 years. I say that, you know, with a lot of pride. I've been at this for a long time. And in the past, we've had much more responsive governments, although it always takes a long time, you know, figuring out something's toxic to get any kind of action. And that's true for smoking or asbestos or DDT or any of those things. So, you know, we recognize it takes time, but the amount of collusion we have now between industry, the media and the government is totally unacceptable. It's not serving the purpose, the common good at all. And, you know, the fact that, first of all, our mainstream media is now so corrupt that you can't believe anything they say. They're beginning to ban, and they've been banning social media for a long time. So any of us who have a view that's different, we're labeled as providing misinformation or being fearmongers, which we're not. We're simply providing different information that may, in fact, be valid. And I think, you know, the one good thing that has come out of this is Elon Musk buying Twitter. Because if he is really sincere about, you know, free speech, then as long as there's one avenue where people can share information openly, then the whole system breaks down. Because then the mainstream media that's sending out misinformation have a counter, you know, a counterbalance to that, and people can then decide for themselves. But free speech is one of the most important things that we should, you know, value in our society. And what's happening right now, both in Canada and in the United States and places like Australia, is absolutely unacceptable in a democratic society.
And, you know, free speech, as you were saying, Magda, is a foundational principle of any democracy, right? And so do we have a democracy then when you've got the government controlling what people say in their opinion? And this severely warps the public's perception when people look for guidance. Now, the thing is, in the U.S., when was it? Was it April 21st, Obama came on and he mentioned that social media was dealing with disinformation, but it wasn't enough. And 6 days later, they announced the creation of this Ministry of Truth, you know, and the other regimes have had ministries of truth, including, you know, the Nazi regime and Stalin. And well, they were pretty damn destructive, you know, and so you've got this. So what I'm concerned about is as a reaction to Twitter being purchased by Elon Musk, and you can say whatever you want about Elon Musk and chips and brains and transhumanism, whatever, but I agree, this could be a very positive thing. You can say whatever you want about Elon, but as a reaction, look what happened. A ministry of truth. The next thing they're going to do is condemn Twitter as not a viable platform anymore, right? So they're trying to one-up each other. And I'll go so far as to say this. I'm very concerned that there's certain powers that are meaning to maintain power as long as possible. And in the US, they have these November midterm elections coming up. All it takes is another distraction or for NATO to get involved in the Ukraine-Russia conflict as a major distraction. And you know, the next thing you know, they're declaring martial law. You got mail-in ballots. And then look what happened in France recently with Macron. You really think he won that election? You really think so? I mean, with what did he have? How low an approval rating? Okay, I won't quote the statistics. I'm not entirely sure, but like, what happened there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is, you know, one of the things that people are making, and it's good that they make, is around unaccountability in the regulatory system. All of the assaults to our health with the clampdown on free speech and interference in the voting system, so that ordinary mothers and fathers and grandmothers and grandfathers can actually stand for election in order to change the system. You know, these are the kind of connections that are really important, I think, in order to push back from what's been going on for the last 2 years. But we're just going to take a quick break now on the Dolores Cahill Show on TNTRadio.live, and we'll be back in 2 minutes.
You should hear what Misty Winston is talking about.
I want to actually talk a little bit about the class divide with you, because I think that, you know, you just mentioned the class war, and we are in, I don't think people recognize it, we are in a class war and have been for some time. The middle class, the working class, we perhaps have been unaware of the fact that we're in a class war, but that's been going on for a long time. So let's talk a little bit about that and the class divide. Well, how do you see things right now? Because I feel like right now there's a lot of distractions being thrown our way to kind of prevent us from noticing the man behind the curtain.
Right. I think people really need to pay attention to what's going on economically in this country. And I don't just mean in reference to inflation. For example, I talked about this the other night. Bill Gates is actually buying farmland in the United States, a lot of farmland. And there was a woman that came on my show about 2 weeks ago, and she was telling me that Bill Gates is stealing water from her town.
Misty Winston on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Here is a broadcast by Pauline Hanson's One Nation for Federal Election.
Since the introduction of family law in 1975, it has done nothing but destroy families and the lives of too many Australians. I have a big problem with domestic violence and the lies. I am sick and tired of hearing about another suicide, and I feel for those families that have lost their loved ones because of murders that have happened. It can only change if we actually make it happen. The lawyers have made a field day out of this, ripping the guts out of parents and taking everything from them. At the end of the day, they've got nothing left. They're destroyed. If we want change here, then we deal with the perjury, we deal with the lies, we deal with taking the kids away from innocent parents who are fighting tooth and nail just to spend time with their children.
Authorised by R. Miles for Pauline Hanson's One Nation Brisbane. Spoken by Pauline Hanson and Elle Appleton.
My therapist had told me that I needed to go to AA meetings, but I wasn't sure whether I wanted to go because I didn't want to be an alcoholic. That was not what I wanted to grow up and be. I didn't want to go to AA, but I did, and it wasn't what I expected by any means. It was friendly. I could feel it. I mean, I could feel the happiness. It's really great.
Visit AA.org for more information and download the Meeting Guide app to find a meeting near you.
The radio station everyone is talking about, TNT, where the longer you listen, the more reasons you find to keep listening. Keep listening. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Dolores Cahill Show on TNTRadio.live, and you can follow me on custodian.com. And my guests today are Professor Magda Havas from Canada and also Dr. Sam Dubé from Canada. And before the break, we were talking about the importance of free speech. And I know, Sam, you have morphs in the last 2 or 3 years. You have the Fifth Doctor on Rumble is that you interview people. But can you maybe just give us some insight into how you, decided or found out what was going on and knew what was going on with COVID-19 was not the true story?
Thank you, Dolores, and thank you for this opportunity. So I think those of us who are seeking truth and trying to expose the truth all have our own story. So with myself, hearing about a flu-like illness in the latter part of 2019 was a real trigger for use of a bad term, the term trigger. I don't like that term, but it started the ball rolling because my mother is from mainland China. Sadly, she passed away fairly recently. She was my hero, but she had some interesting experience in her life. And so coming from there, I was concerned that we wouldn't hear objectively what was happening in China, flu-like illness in China. I was concerned that we weren't going to hear the truth, so to speak. And so I watched that situation very carefully. And it was in January of 2020 when the Indian paper surfaced about the four subdomains looking like they were genetically engineered. That was the huge red flag. And I remember looking at this paper and knowing enough to see, wow, I mean, probabilistically for these subdomains to have evolved in nature, it rounds to zero, And yeah. And then 3 days later, the paper was gone with a retraction that basically, there was no apology, nothing. And then I heard the Indian team said, don't worry, someday we will publish our research. So that was a huge red flag for me. So I started watching it a lot more closely at that point. And I was surfing the web looking for research on this, right? And that's what I was doing is as a non-clinical physician, I try to use my background, especially in science, hard science and physics and in mathematics to explore areas because I consult in industry. I was doing this with this flu-like illness, right? And so I had been active in the media. I won't talk all about that now, but I was active in the sporting world, specifically the competitive strength arena, and I co-hosted a television show for over 10 years. And so I had a little bit of a media experience, and I was branching out at that point to doing interviews with various people over the last several years. And I had interviewed everyone from dating coaches to businessmen, and there's still some interviews on BitChute, and I'm proud of them because I met some very interesting people with a lot of very interesting things to say. But I decided to shift my focus onto direct and indirect confrontation of what was going on. So one of the first interviews I did was with Patrick Holford, who is a researcher based in the UK and probably arguably the number one vitamin C authority on the planet. And in fact, Dr. Yep. Pierre Corey was working with him. And we couldn't even mention the word virus because of what was happening on YouTube at that point. We didn't want to be censored. And I very rapidly got shadow banned. At that point, I was working with a platform because I really I wasn't techie. I didn't know how to post videos. And, I was basically doing what I wanted to do as a freelancer and then handing videos over to a platform that was happy to receive them. Occasionally, they would give me a guest. And then I realized that I wanted to focus more. And so eventually parted ways and started doing my own thing. And that's where the Fifth Doctor on Rumble comes about. So if anyone wants to look that up, I have a strange alphanumeric link that I'm not happy about, but that goes to show you how little I knew about, making links and sites and
but platforms. You can find you by just putting in the Fifth Doctor, right? And you've done amazing interviews.
Yeah. That's right. And absolutely. And you're one of them, Dolores. You're one of those interviews. And
it was an honor.
I'll tell you what, I was honored. And I pride myself on doing these interviews in kind of a free form sort of way because I want people to be able to speak. And so some of the people that I interviewed, one was Ivory Hecker. Ivory Hecker was the Fox 26 Houston news broadcaster who blew the whistle on Fox suppressing and trying to get her away from doing stories on early treatments, including hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. She's been involved almost since the beginning, and we've stayed in touch And it's been an honor to actually do some work with her. And I've learned a lot from her. And that is a woman also who, like you, has ovaries of steel, I'll tell you.
That's one of the best compliments, Sam.
And I mean it. I mean it that way for sure. Kryptonite to the globalists and ovaries of steel. And that's what I titled your interview. So the fifth doctor, the name comes from my buddy John, who said, oh, you just go with like the 4 out of 5 doctors who recommended smoking cigarettes thing, and you'll be the fifth doctor. And I'm like, yeah, until I found out that the original statement was 9 out of 10 doctors. So I'm like, damn, it could have been the 10th doctor, but I've already got the damn link, you know. So there's that. So I've done interviews with one I should mention was Pierre Corey. Gave his Senate address. It was the second Senate address. The first, I believe, was in March of 2020. Might have been in May of 2020. Forgive me if I'm wrong there. But it was very early on in the so-called pandemic where he talked about the use of corticosteroids in the treatment of COVID patients. So then he gave another one at the behest of Senator Ron Johnson, who has been an oasis in a desert of despair, so to speak, right? And one of the only U.S. politicians to really give a voice to the vaccine injured, right? And, or the injection injured, as well as the early treatment protocols. So he had Dr. Pierre Corey come on in December, I believe it was December 8th of 2020, where he gave a very tearful and emotional testimony in front of the Senate committee about the use of ivermectin. And I got his number and called up his secretary, and her name at the time, her administrator's name was Joyce. And she said, Sam, apart from Senator Johnson, you're the only one in the world that wants to speak to us right now. Dr. Corey graciously accepts your invitation for an interview. So I was the first or one of the first to interview him, publicly about ivermectin. And that was in December of 2020. And, he eventually spread the word and he held a Congress on this online, I believe in March of 2021. You know, and I think probably, though, the idea that I came up with to address the persecuted physicians in Canada. So I was having a discussion with Roger Hodgkinson, and I'd been inspired by Roger because very early on, there was Roger coming onto a town hall meeting in, I believe, Edmonton, Alberta, where he basically said, this is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on an unsuspecting human race, something to that effect.
And it was like, amazingly articulate as well. He synopsized the whole thing and gave his credentials, which are impeccable. He'd also worked in industry and just synopsized it within 5 minutes.
Absolutely. And he told me he had been waiting about 8 hours to get on that call. He had his assistant wait on that call for 8 hours. And the fact checkers, the worst they could say about him was an individual who claimed to be Dr. Roger Hodgkinson, appeared in an audio broadcast, blah, blah, blah. And then when they found out it was him for real, you know, they tried to discredit things he said by misquoting his credentials with the Royal College and all this business. And it was just unreal. Again, red flags. So Roger had inspired me. And I was on the phone with him one day and I said, I'd really like to address these persecuted physicians, Dr. Patrick Phillips being one of them, Dr. Francis Christian, a surgeon out of Saskatchewan. I'm sure Magda is familiar with these names, may even know them. And Roger said to me, Sam, you could interview them together, And I'm like, you know what? Why don't I just do a damn panel? So Roger helped get me some of the physicians. I got a few more and we ended up having this panel on Canada Day. And we had Francis Christian, we had Chris Milburn, we had Patrick Phillips. I had a second one also, so I'm mixing up the names here. And we had Roger Hodgkinson. Mark Trozzi was in the second one. He was in the second one. And so I had John Carpe from the Justice Center for Constitutional Freedoms come on as the legal voice. And we broadcast, and each of them, I gave them a chance to tell their story, what had happened, and how they were being persecuted. And then John Carpe provided the legal voice for that. And what ended up happening is Charles Hoff from British Columbia, these rural family physicians, they know everything. They're held in really high esteem in clinical medicine. I'll tell you, Charles Hoff, what a gentleman and what a warrior. And he gave his talk about using a D-dimer to detect these microclots in the double vaccinated, in the vaccinated coming in, and he had done like a mini study on his own. And so Alex Jones from InfoWars saw the video and picked up that portion and broadcast it. And we got almost 1 million views because of that.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I'm very grateful to Alex Jones for seeing that, because that needed, and then other physicians, Dr. Mark Trozzi was on there. You know, we did a second one, and I met Dr. Rojanae Killian, who it turned out was also doing D-dimers on her own. And she resigned from the 5-hospital healthcare system where she had been a senior emergency physician, and resigned in protest of what was being done. They couldn't scientifically justify the mandates, the vaccine mandates and such. And she, again, is an incredible warrior for health freedom and health freedom. You know, there were many others. I could go on. I met Dr. Tess Laurie, who you're very familiar with, and did a British panel about the dangers, the concerns about vaccinating children. And that was done very early on. And they were careful about what they said, because we knew we were under scrutiny. The interview I did with Dr. Roger Hodgkin were the last ones he did on YouTube. We got banned. I interviewed Dr. Peter McCullough, one of his first interviews I did with him. And he is unbelievable. You know, if there's an Aragorn here, you're Galadriel. If there's an Aragorn in this battle, it's Peter McCullough. And I met Dr. Paul Alexander as well, another Canadian who went along with the Freedom Convoy here in Canada and then accompanied the Americans in the convoy that they created, inspired by the Canadian convoy. He is just, I mean, he was offered $1 million by Pfizer to shut up, basically. And he didn't take it. You know, Paul Alexander's another incredible warrior. Jessica Rose.
And
as well.
I think another, there's some like, you know, the lawyer, Rocco Gelati as well is an amazing.
Rocco Gelati.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
He was already quite famous.
We sent him all the very best. Yeah. And also there is some people that I've been in touch with across America. And I just want to give a shout out to David and Karen as well. David is formerly involved in military. There's many people across Canada that are extremely generous as well in supporting us in Europe and around the world. But also, Sam, we're in touch with on calls, just for people to know, all of the people really around the world are regularly on calls every week in the Doctors for COVID Ethics Zoom calls as well.
That's right, we are. And so there's an international community there that originally started with physicians and researchers in mind, and it's expanded. And we sit there and we hobnob, we talk, we vent. Our longest meeting we had went over 10 and a half hours, I have to say. Yeah. And Magda, you'd be more than welcome to attend. Although usually we have a guest speaker and then we have our less formal discussion afterwards. And a lot of great ideas come up at that time. And you're no stranger to those meetings, Laura. It's always wonderful to have you there.
No, they're amazing. And I'm honored. And, you know, we have obviously the World Doctors Alliance and World Freedom Alliance, yes, and the World Council for Health. Yes. All of us, but I think it kind of gives hope for people, and anyone can come to those Zoom calls. But, you know, a lot of the time we have key people like Professor Sukrabakti on the calls, or yes, Reiner Fulnick, and a lot, yes, of us just listen for hours as well, just keep it on in the background while we're working to hear. And we also have amazing people that give us the psychological and the historical context as well around propaganda.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And several others. And in fact, we had a Daniel Estulin, an advisor to Latin American nations and an author of multiple books, come on and really talk to us about what he felt was happening. And it can be quite chilling sometimes when you hear what's happening in different countries. And unfortunately, Canada was in the spotlight for some time. I do want to take this opportunity to mention efforts in Canada. And you're very familiar with my friend, Raymond Strom, who, like, if there's a Gandalf working behind the scenes here, it's him. Definitely. You know, Raymond uses his scientific background in his plethora of contacts and networks to bring people together on a massive scale. And very, very understated about it. So this shout out to Ray, buddy Ray, it's an honor to know you and to work with you.
That's Raymond Strom from Canada. And we had him on in the beginning as well. And he is hugely connected, as well as you are, Magda, right? Because between us, I suppose we're all connected with tens of thousands of people all around the world
now,
that are actually
viewers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And mothers have really come to the forefront now too, with the threat to children of the vaccines and the near infinite risk reward ratio to injecting children with them. And the statistics are appalling. And yet there's still this effort to try and get this type of approval to inject healthy children who are not generally threatened by severe COVID at all.
The good news is there was statistics from Northern Ireland, which said that less than 2%, so more than 98% of children in Northern Ireland are not injected. But Matt, feel free to come in.
Well, I was just wondering, Sam, with your interest in athletics, what you think about some of the heart attacks that athletes
have. I'm really glad you asked me that, Magda. So we've got, you know, over 800 cases there in Europe alone of these athletes just dropping. Largely, you see these videos from soccer, known as football, in Europe. And, you know, as Dr. Peter McCullough would say, there's no such thing as a mild myocarditis. And so when you go about your daily activities, for a well-trained athlete, daily activity is not a severe stress for them. And so it won't manifest. But when you're practicing or when you're on the field pushing hard and you see it, especially in a sport like soccer, where it's high interval training, right? So they're like sprinting and then stopping and sprinting and stopping. This is very tough on the body. It's one of the most effective ways to train for strength and conditioning. And then the athlete will stop and then all of a sudden not feel well and become syncopic, or, you know, they'll drop. And it's like that. It could definitely be manifestations of myocarditis. Absolutely. And so, you know, the media is turning a blind eye, and you get these ridiculous statements like making your bed will cause a heart attack. Talking about COVID will give you a heart attack, you know, like these things. And, oh, by the way, it's normal for children to have strokes. I saw that on a bus in the US, you know, like things like this where the media, and I mean, like, to people who have, you know, even moderate health and medical knowledge, they know it's garbage, right? It's absolute garbage. And they're trying to cover for these things, right? And fortunately, there's people that see through this. And I wanted to see into, there are organizations in Canada that have really, you know, taken the bull by the horns, and people and experts working together. The Canadian COVID Care Alliance is one, and they did a big presentation on the initial Pfizer trial data and just showed how manipulated it was. It's a fantastic presentation, video and PDF, and I urge you to go to their site, Canadian COVID Care Alliance. Just look them up, easy to find. And Take Action Canada is a people's group. Action for Canada, Vaccine Choice Canada. I mean, these are all groups that are headed by incredibly passionate, driven people, and they're organized. They're organized, and they're coming together. And they don't want to take this anymore. And like Magda was saying, as a people, Canadians, you know, the stereotype is we bump into you and apologize, right? But we are proud of being Canadian, and we're proud of that as well. And so, if anything, we've been somewhat complacent and overly trusting. And now we need to harness who we are. We really do. We're a mosaic, multicultural, multi-ethnic, but we have a strength that runs through our spines. When people come, my mother came to this country knowing exactly what communism was. You know, my father's a 12th generation French Canadian. I'm a first generation Chinese Canadian on my mother's side. So, you know, I got 400 years of history in this country. And, you know, there's those of us that understand what an alternative is like, or have heard from parents or grandparents what an alternative is like. So we need to think about that and think about what it is we really want and what we think of Canada to be ideally. And that's not what's happening right now. That absolutely is not what's happening. And we have these questionable leaders with questionable credentials making unreal decisions counter to democracy. And the people need to become more aware and look at alternative media and not put all their eggs in the basket of the mainstream media and not be afraid. I mean, it's normal, it's human to be afraid, but people are afraid because if they hear different, and I've talked to colleagues in the healthcare industry who don't want to know. No, Sam, don't send me the link. I don't want to know, okay? Because humans want consistency in their behavior. So in addition to this idea of a mass formation, we have this. Humans want to be consistent in their thoughts and actions. And if you present to them evidence that shatters their world for the past 2.5 years, that's not going to go down really well, right? So anyway, I'm sorry. I would love Magda to comment on this too, because it's incredibly frustrating for us, for those of us who have been following it, you know, from the beginning, or who've kind of, you know, decided differently along the way, who changed their minds along the way, and now have this evidence, right? It's so frustrating for us. Please, Magda.
I see a parallel between the athletes having these heart attacks and what happened in London in the 1950s during the London smog. That was an episode that lasted, you know, a number of days. And the elderly, a lot of the elderly died and were sick, and people who had breathing problems, bronchitis, asthma, that sort of thing. But at that time, there was a fair, a Royal Agricultural Fair in London, and some of the top animals were dying. The cows, you know, the sheep that were prize animals, they were dying during the London smog. And that reminds me of the athletes. The same thing is happening. These are you know, animals that you don't expect to, you know, die of air pollution kind of thing. So we knew it was very serious. And same thing with the athletes. I think where there's a heck of a lot we can learn from what's happening with them.
Absolutely.
I think it's absolutely really, really serious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, yeah. And, you know, I do want to also give a shout out for the vax injured, because these are a group of people that have been not only ignored, but gaslit. You know, and there you look at Veyers, you look at Udra Vigilance, and you can't ignore this data. You can't. And by law, Veyers has to be maintained. And there's no excuse saying like, oh, yeah, no, it doesn't work well and all this. Yeah, OK. Because of the Vaccine Act, I mean, you guys have to maintain this site. So like, this is the data that we have. And, you know, when over 80% are being filled out by healthcare professionals, specifically physicians, and it's difficult to fill these out, and then they're random, they seem to be just deleting data regularly from Veyers. And you can talk to Dr. Jessica Rose about that. She's one of the experts, independent experts with no financial ties, Dolores.
Absolutely. And I guess we were in Sweden as well last week, and we interviewed Aga Wilson, and she's launching a campaign in Sweden, but around the world, for can we talk about it, including on Twitter. And that is in a way to allow the people who have taken the injections to talk about the adverse events. But also, I think one of the things, the main priorities now is for us to try and detoxify them as much as we can in order to recover their health and also their fertility. Now, we only have the last few minutes on the show, so maybe if both of you would just like to give us the information about how people can follow you and support you. So maybe Magda first.
Okay, I have a number of websites. One is magdahavis.com. One is theroselab.com that deals with healing frequencies. I have zoriglazier.com that has historical documents from the United States, and the globalemf.net that is our volunteer program for monitoring around the globe.
That's wonderful. And I must say the globalemf.net is an amazing initiative. And also for people, if they do want to get their own EMF meters and to volunteer, they can contact you. And Magda, I know you were mentioning your email as well, if you want people to contact you.
The best email to reach me at is drmagdahavis @gmail.com. I'd be happy to hear from some of your listeners.
Great. That's drmagdahavis @gmail.com.
H-A-V-A-S. Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not as well established as Magda. Basically, if you subscribe to my channel on Rumble, The Fifth Doctor, you'll experience interviews sometimes with people who are not that well known, who have a lot to say, and find out some information about the counter narrative, so to speak, the real science and not scientism. So I'd be grateful if you subscribe to that. I just put up a recent interview. We have to address the fact that the international health regulations are going to be voted on by unelected officials within about 2 weeks. And that is very serious, because if those rules are established and modified, then it allows the World Health Organization agreement where they want to sign, you know, almost 200 countries to this agreement. It allows them power over the sovereignty of these countries if they declare another pandemic. And it's just Absolutely. Reprehensible, this power grab.
And sorry, that is the World Health Organization Pandemic Treaty, and we've talked about that. So I'd just like to thank again very much my guest from Canada today, Dr. Sam Dubé. And also Professor Dr. Magda Havas from Canada. And thank you to everyone for listening to The Dolores Kyle Show.